Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, July 13th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Sarah Lane.
Behind the board is our somnambulant producer, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, Gary.
That sounds good. You know, I don't think that's right, though. I think it means sleepy or something, and you're not sleepy.
I'll have to look that up. I don't know.
You look wide awake. This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day along with you and try to make sense of it all. And, boy, let's try to make sense of what's going on in Massachusetts.
What's going on in Massachusetts?
I believe
Are we allowed to IM each other still?
I think when you look up Nanny State...
Uh-huh.
You get a picked map of Massachusetts in the dictionary.
So why does Massachusetts have this whole liberal, we do everything first reputation among the states?
Well, they're verging on socialist with this.
Okay.
It has long been illegal in Massachusetts to provide minors with matter harmful to minors. Well, that makes sense.
Sure. Okay.
If you're giving something harmful to a
minor. In
theory,
this sounds okay.
That would be harming. That'd be harmful. Yeah. That should be against the law. The crimes against chastity. Morality, decency, and good order. Well, this doesn't sound terribly liberal. It sounds fairly conservative.
Good order.
The law targets, it's an old law, is my guess. The law targets obscenity, but only in its physical forms until now. In April, this harmful to minors law received a brief update, just a couple of paragraphs, but they now make it illegal to distribute harmful matter, such as I just mentioned, over electronic mail, instant messages, text messages, and any other communication created by means of use of the internet or wireless network, whether by computer, telephone, or any other device.
So,
why do they have to stipulate computer or telephone if they're going to say any other device? Couldn't they just cut that out and
anything.
Say any device?
Apple Press, everything. Yeah. Everything's separate. I understand that the idea of harming children and minors is the root of this, but does this apply to, if you're going to... IM, let's just use that as an example again. I do a lot of IMing throughout the day. Something that is deemed harmful under these terms to a minor. Okay, but what if I've just got a kid standing next to me and you send me something that's funny between the two of us and not harmful?
That's why the ACLU is going after this reactionary law from this conservative Massachusetts that somehow has come into existence. They argue in its complaint that due to the very nature of the internet, virtually every communication on the internet may potentially be received by a minor and therefore may potentially be the basis for prosecution. Because internet speakers have no means to restrict minors in Massachusetts from accessing their communications, the act effectively requires almost all discourse on the internet, whether among citizens of Massachusetts or someone anywhere else in the world, to be at a level suitable for young children.
What is going on out there?
The act therefore bans an entire category of constitutionally protected speech between and among adults on the internet, and therefore, they say, it's unconstitutional.
I tend to agree.
And they also say because it inappropriately extends Massachusetts law over the entire internet, that it violates interstate commerce laws, too.
I don't want any of those.
This is
Red Sox laws on keep them off my body.
Yeah, seriously.
My IM windows.
Keep your Patriots and your Red Sox laws. Oh, wait a minute. I don't even know
Paul
what accent
Revere,
that is.
Midnight Rides, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on over there,
your
but
Kennedys
we don't like it.
And your Vampire Weekend.
Are they from Boston?
I don't know. They sing about Cape Cod. I figured they might be from Boston.
Oh, I think they're from, like, they're Harvard kids or something like that.
Anyhow. Hopefully this
keep
gets
your vampire
struck
weekend.
Down fast.
Yeah.
Because
Massachusetts.
We have had a federal version of this, the Child Online Protection Act, declared unconstitutional for the very reasons that the ACLU is arguing. Because you can't say the entire internet has to dumb down to the level of children. And the way the internet works, you can't just say making something available on the internet is therefore making it available to children. It's a lot trickier than that.
It certainly is.
You can have the great firewall of Massachusetts.
Libraries, laptops in public Wi-Fi area. I mean, the whole thing is, this is not being defined well enough. That's for sure.
Coincidentally, today the U.S. Appeals Court tossed out the FCC's indecency policy, thus retroactively legalizing wardrobe malfunctions.
Yes.
Do you think they'll get their money back for the CBS will get their money back for the fine?
Are we talking about Janet Jackson Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Probably not. Probably not.
No, my guess is that money's long been spent by the FCC But now that we don't have to be decent, I can come up with all kinds of stories.
On decent cover-up wear. Robes.
On
very fluffy robes.
Microsoft is releasing Windows Phone 7 Tools Beta. Preview phones will be arriving to developers next week, so we'll probably see a rash of reviews of new Windows Phone 7 prototypes out next week.
So if you're a developer, you're excited about this, and if you're people like us, you're excited to hear about what people can put together.
Yeah, well,
at least initially.
We'll start to get a better idea of what kind of apps the developers will be creating for this. If you don't get a Windows Phone preview, like actual physical phone, they are also setting up centers where you can go to test out your apps so that you don't just have to use the emulator like Apple did with the iPad. They made everybody use the emulator, and then as soon as the iPad came out, everyone was in a rush to get an iPad to test out their app to make sure it actually worked on the hardware.
What centers? Like a office building?
Yeah, it's probably just an office somewhere where you can go check in and say, hey, I'm a developer. I want to install my app on a phone.
I wonder where the office would be in San Francisco.
I imagine Microsoft's got an office in San Francisco. They could open up for that. That's a good question, though. Anybody knows? TNT?
I'd like to know how that whole process works. You know, you ring the doorbell and I'm a developer.
You have to show your developer ID card.
Right. Yeah. Developer ID card. I have to answer a few questions.
And they ask you to compile a few lines of code.
Right.
And then they let you.
Yeah, you're out of here.
No, I'm sure there's probably a developer's website where you can
log
in and reserve your appointment, make an appointment.
Crash them.
Apple's shares are in the toilet. That's because I dropped them. No, I'm actually, I don't own any shares in Apple. I'm not allowed to own shares in Apple.
I don't either.
Because it would violate my objectivity.
That's right.
However, if you own shares of Apple, you might want to look in your toilet. Because shares of Apple slid more than 4% on Tuesday. That's hardly the toilet. That's like off the credenza.
It's like the
higher than when a lot of people bought Apple stock a couple of years ago, and it seemed high at the time.
Here we go. By the way, Ariel says 835 Market Street, Suite 700, San Francisco, California.
Sweet.
If you would like to.
Love the chat room.
To go.
Drop on by. Tell them we sent you.
We don't know if that's the address of Microsoft. Could be someone's grandma's apartment. We have no idea.
Ariel's frenemy's house.
Right.
Don't bring pie.
Tell them Ariel sent you. Shares of Apple slid 4%. Okay, a lot of people are thinking this because of the iPhone antenna, because Consumer Reports
said we don't recommend the iPhone 4 after testing. We just can't recommend it. But if you happen to have one, you could put a little masking tape or duct tape over the...
The other thing
issue
that Consumer Reports did was they gave it a rating of 76 on their scale,
which
out
renders
of 100 points,
their favorite phone out of what's available
it's
today.
It's the highest rating they've given to any phone on sale right now.
But they don't recommend it.
Ahead of the iPhone 3GS and the HTC Evo 4G.
Now, I understand that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, the highest rated phone that's not recommended by us means we don't recommend any phones, but it's also just kind of silly in general.
Well, I would run in this from time to time when I was doing the top five at CNET, and I would go and I'd say, well, wait a minute, this phone had a higher rating, but it's not listed on your best five.
Right.
And say Kent German, who does the reviews over there, would say, oh, well, my best five is actually saying these are the best five in five different categories. So if you just want the top five rated phones, that's a different list. But I don't think that's what's going on here.
That's also not clear.
Because the iPhone 3GS is pretty much exactly the same category as the iPhone 4.
Right.
So what they're saying is, we really love this phone. It's great in every respect, but we have a principled problem with recommending it because it's got this broken thing on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if Apple were to come out with a fix for that,
then Consumer Reports would call it best phone ever.
They might, exactly. They might spell it with an A and everything.
Yeah.
Also, Apple analysts are saying that this is a good time to buy stock because they don't really think that the iPhone 4 antenna problems are going to have a major effect because, frankly, people still buying them in droves.
That's the main issue, isn't it? Is that if nobody was buying these phones, or if at least selling had dropped off dramatically, then Apple would be forced to go, okay, we got a real big problem on our hands. But that's not what's happening. I mean,
they're buying them anyway.
You know?
And I don't know about you, but I don't run into dropped calls in the course of using the phone regularly.
I'm using a bumper. Didn't buy my phone, so I feel as though I'm a little bit... I think certain things would be bothering me a lot more if, you know, I had parted with a large amount of money, you know. So I'm kind of just testing things out with my bumper, and especially since when I'm at home, which is a lot of the time, you know, I've switched over to Wi-Fi, and, you know, my FaceTime calling, which I'm actually using pretty regularly, is not even a 3G thing. I'm not having a big problem.
Are you
not having a big problem?
I haven't noticed any calls drop, but I have noticed a precipitous drop in my web speed, my data speed.
Mm. If you hold it wrong?
Yeah.
Well, you're holding it wrong.
Just don't hold it that way.
I know.
Problem solves itself.
I think the thing here is that while you can prove that there is a problem, most people now know of that problem, and most people aren't running into it as an issue in their everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if that changes, though. It may be that people like Eric will start to get tired of having to go, oh, right, I'm covering up the thing.
It's in such a natural place to hold it. You just think if they had only made the seams up at the very top, it'd be almost impossible to touch them, but they had to put them at the bottom.
Right.
I have noticed that, too, because now I think about it every time I hold the phone, is that, I mean, we've talked about this before, I have very small hands, so you know, it's not as if they're always just going to cover the whole phone. I mean, I'm always holding it right there, always. That's just the way I hold it.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't try to talk about this Consumer Reports review about the iPhone antenna on the Apple forums, because apparently they're deleting those. That's a good move.
Although, Wired has reported that they're not deleting everything that has to do with the subject. Certain threads, popular threads, did sort of mysteriously disappear, so it causes one to wonder, what's going on over there?
Sometimes
it's not like they're wiping everything out.
Sometimes moderators will delete threads because they're getting out of hand.
People will go, Apple's censoring Consumer Report discussions, which is not necessarily true.
Even if that is true, I would say Apple's forum moderators should be using a lighter touch in this arena right now than they might normally, because you want to let this brush fire burn itself out. You don't want to, you know.
Right. As soon as you start hiding things and deleting things, you look guilty.
Or even appearing to.
Yes, exactly. I'd like to think maybe it's because somebody called somebody else a doo-doo head or something.
Yeah.
Said, you know, we're shutting this
down. It's a lot of different threads for that to happen, but, you know, you could just delete that part of the post instead of the whole thread.
Very true.
It is a common scorched earth policy on forums to just say, you know what, fine, we're getting rid of the whole thread. Now you have nowhere to complain about the co-host. No, there's nothing like that. last week's heat wave prompted another eruption of that perennial question, if I get a plug-in car, will I cause disaster? Because it would bring down the power grid if all these people plug in their electric cars all at the same time.
I didn't realize that this was some sort of a question that was keeping people from wanting to buy electric cars.
I was up all night last night.
Thinking about bringing down the grid here on the West Coast.
Like, what if I made
my Prius
a plug-in?
It's been about 65 for the last couple of weeks, and we don't have AC. And
I might cause more fog.
Just the marine layer.
Yes,
marine layer.
So, but this is a real... No, people are really concerned if a lot of people got electric cars, our already strained electrical grid might not be able to hold up to it.
Exactly. But it sounds like, in fact, it's not really that big of a problem.
No.
Or potentially, what did they say? Something like,
to be
charging your electric car overnight would be akin to having five plasma TVs on.
Not that you have five plasma TVs on, but
it's
the influx of plasma TVs has not caused grid crashes.
Right.
So one would expect that an influx of electric cars, at least at the very beginning, would not cause grid crashes.
Although the article, what I did like about this, first of all, we can rest easy, or you can anyway. I was resting just fine, but you don't have to worry. You could plug in an electric car and you'd be okay. But what if, Tom, you've got a Prius, so you're already kind of green tech. If you went full electric and you installed an EV volt wattage, whatever you call those things, in your garage, what if like five other people on your cul-de-sac do the same thing?
I don't live on a cul-de-sac. Well, stop saying that.
You know what I mean. I just like that word, cul-de-sac.
So you're talking about a bunch of tree-hugging hippies get plug-ins on the same node.
Yes, exactly.
And blow the transformer because they've got them all plugged in at
exactly.
once.
Exactly. To have, you know, and the thing is that electric cars... yes, people are going to be buying them, but they said something like of the 300 million cars on the road, you know, there are only going to be 10,000. The Chevy Volts that are they're probably going to be sold to consumers in 2011, right? So the number is still pretty small. So if you're peppering them throughout the population, you know, and that sort of level is not a really big deal. If 10 people happen to live on your cul-de-sac, then you might have a regional issue, a physical regional issue. I just go with it.
Yes,
cul-de-sacs
right.
are cool.
So me and all the other suburban people on the cul-de-sac at our Priuses, you're blame the Toyota owners like everyone did with the crash stuff, with the recall. Turns out the U.S. Department of Transportation has analyzed dozens of data recorders from Toyota Motor Corp and found that the accidents were not caused by any kind of electronic failure. They found at the time of the crashes, throttles were wide open and the brakes were not engaged. It's PEBCASWA.
Wait a second here.
Problem exists between chair and steering wheel.
So how many instances are we talking about here?
Well, several hundred.
Several hundred instances of folks saying...
Some drivers who said their Toyota and Lexus vehicles surged out of control were mistakenly flooring the accelerator when they intended to jam on the brakes.
God.
Now...
Sounds like something my grandmother would do.
Wall Street Journal hastens to say the findings don't exonerate Toyota from two known issues blamed for sudden acceleration, sticky accelerator pedals and floor mats that can trap accelerator pedals. But the findings show that in a sample of reports in which a driver of a Toyota vehicle said the brakes were depressed but failed to stop the car from accelerating, they were actually pressing the accelerator, not the brakes.
So if I can just infer... This is actually an issue that was affecting cars, and then people who are bad drivers learned about this issue and have it in their heads and do stupid things on the road and go, accelerator, bad accelerator, something wrong with my car.
Yeah, it was a minor issue, and then a bunch of people said, hey, that happened to me.
And it's
a common thing when people panic to hit the wrong pedal.
And that's why when you learn to drive,
you don't
have your left foot on the brake and your right foot on the accelerator. You have to move the feet over because if you're panic, you'll do both.
Exactly.
I remember that from summer school.
Although in most modern cars, if you do both, the brake takes precedence.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never tried.
Yeah. Don't try it.
I've always wondered what happens if you pull your e-brake when you're going down the freeway at like 65.
Yeah, you'll ruin your brake.
Okay.
Well, it'll slow your car down
a little
bit. I just wonder.
Yeah. I haven't tried it.
Well, it's an emergency brake on purpose or, you know.
I thought you would just do some crazy donuts.
I don't think it locks you up. I don't think it's that good of a brake.
Mm.
It just will help slow you down. Mm. But I'm sure we will now get emails from many people who actually know how they work to clarify.
It's kind of interesting how Toyota got really beat down by this whole thing. This story is not new, right? It's kind of interesting how they just sort of had to take it. You remember they have all those sort of Toyota PSA kind of commercials. We're investing $1 million a day to make you safer and da da da. Well, they're quietly conducting some tests and then kind of have to come, you know, because they can't do that right away. They have to make sure that their information is solid before they go, yeah, not really what happened, even though our reputation is kind of in the...
Well, yes and no. National Highway Transportation Safety says that they have found one example of a fatality that was caused by a malfunction, a mechanical malfunction, but they haven't found any electronic malfunctions, and they're not done with their entire study. They're not going to come out with the full-on report. This is just the Wall Street Journal got a hold of some early results. So, Walmart is advertising a $200 Connect bundle. You get the hardware, a $30 gift card for online purchases in Xbox Live, and a game, Connect Sports, all for $200. I think that means the $150 price point for Connect's probably right on.
So Walmart was the official outer of the Connect $150 or $149 price tag?
Yeah.
Because this is something that people had been talking about already, but this is an actual... I mean, it was an email promotion, but it exists.
Yeah, the Connect pricing has leaked out because we had the GameStop putting them up for pre-order, and we had Amazon putting them up for pre-order, and now we have Walmart putting it up for pre-order as a bundle. So I don't know why they just don't come out and say this is the price, since everybody's pre-ordering them at $150 or $200 for a bundle.
What would be the reason? I mean, what would there possibly be as a good reason not to just say, here's our price point? I mean, because what can they really change at this point?
If they decided they wanted to make it more expensive so they make more money? Sandeep Agarwal of Karas & Company wrote Monday that Kinect could help industry gaming market generate $2 billion in its first year, with Microsoft snagging $1 billion of that. So they get greedy.
Analysts. Raise the price.
You can't spell analyst without list.
That's right. Or stall.
Or null. Man claims to own 84% of Facebook. It's a lawsuit in New York where Paul D. Seglia of Wellsville, New York, claims that he entered into a contract with Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg in 2003 to design and develop a website that would ultimately become the Facebook. And he was paid a $1,000 fee and a 50% stake in the final product, which eventually launched, became the Facebook that we all know. He also says, to get the other 34%, that he was granted an additional 1% stake per day until the website was completed, giving him an 84% stake in the company as of February 4th, 2004. Judge Thomas Brown issued a temporary restraining order blocking any transfer of assets from Facebook earlier this month after Facebook requested the case be dismissed.
So when Facebook requests that the case be dismissed, they're not saying this guy is just making the whole thing up. We've never heard of him. They're just saying this particular situation is not worthy of a case.
Correct.
By the way, this guy, and I'm not saying that the two are related in any way, but he has a bit of a record for trying to swindle money.
He has been accused of defrauding his customers.
In a wood chip company.
That's your friend in the wood chipper there, huh?
What are wood chips, by the way? I wasn't going to ask this, but I might as well just be honest. I don't know what they are.
Where you throw a bunch of, you can buy a bag of wood chips at the hardware store and then you throw them down and it makes a little bed.
It's like rock.
Keeps the weeds down.
Kind of thing, and looks kind of cute.
Yeah, we have a bunch in our backyard now that I have a backyard.
I see. It's like desert landscaping.
On my cul-de-sac.
On your cul-de-sac. Yeah. I knew it. What's right, next? A hammock?
Right next to the zinnias. During a few hours of last week's East Coast heat wave, thousands of megawatts worth of electricity, enough to power hundreds of thousands of homes, were temporarily removed from the grid through a virtual power plant. This, according to Martin LaMonica at CNET.com. Essentially, what's going on here is pretty cool. Power companies are making deals with demand-side resource providers. Those companies go out and collect agreements from factories and industry and office buildings and grocery stores to allow their power to be shut down a bit at certain times when the grid is taxed, so that they don't shut their power down all the way, but let's say they just kind of dim the lights a bit or the air conditioning goes off.
Okay, so somewhere like the Twit Cottage would be a bad example because we need our power.
We have that already.
The dimming of the lights, yeah, that happens regularly.
Yeah, you may not know.
Nobody's paying us.
We're already on this. Involuntary.
But a grocery store, especially in the middle of the day, well, a lot of grocery stores now don't have windows. The old style used to have those kind of little crescent windows. But in the middle of the day, you dim the lights a little bit, nobody's going to be mad about that. The customer's going to be able to go about their day. Not a big deal. If somebody's paying you, I mean, are they paying you only if they have to pull back your power, or are you getting a reduced energy bill every month just to be a partner in the program?
I think you get paid per use, right?
Okay.
So the example they give is a supermarket has the lights dimmed for 15 minutes or so. It's not a big deal for the supermarket.
Right.
But in the aggregate, they're doing this with tons of different businesses. Mm-hmm. And so they can save, in the example here, the 2,500 megawatts for three straight hours on Wednesday. A full-size nuclear power plant generates about 1,000 megawatts.
Sure.
So this was a huge way to not have to actually buy more power, which would be expensive.
People trading it around, you give some small payments.
And they want to start using this with household users, with small customers. Because, again, in the aggregate, if you're not at home and they say, you know what, we're going to reduce the energy going to your home by 10% while you're out during the day.
I'd be so all over this.
And we'll knock a little bit off your electrical bill for doing it. And they can do that with enough places. They could save a ton of wattage.
I feel like I would say yes to this, even if they didn't knock anything off my electric bill. I'd just say, okay.
No, I want to get paid.
Do you?
Yeah. But I think it's a good idea.
I don't know. I just like the idea of, I like the aggregate idea of this whole thing.
South Korea, on the other hand, is trying to kill you with robots. Actually, only trying to kill you with robots if you are in the demilitarized zone, which you had no business
being
in.
Which is the border they share with North Korea.
Yeah.
Which is the two countries, there's some history there.
They're still at war. Technically, they're in an armistice. They have never declared peace.
Really?
Yeah.
So, tell me more about the robot.
You're right, the robot. South Korea is developing a remote-controlled sentry bot on the border with the North. If the command center operator cannot identify possible intruders, the robot's audio or video communication system, by the communication system, the operator can order it to fire a 40-millimeter automatic grenade launcher or a gun.
What if the guy up in the tower, lost a contact or something? I don't know who that is. Fire a robot, and it's a colleague.
It does. The way they wrote this, it does
makes it sound very...
I don't know who that is, but it's the DMZ. And essentially, if you're out there in the DMZ and you can't show who you are, exactly, even to a robot, you're going to get shot.
If you're wandering in the DMZ, robots will probably shoot you.
That is the way things go in Korea. Apparently.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because... it's like video game come to life.
Well,
I feel like this is the premise of a video game that would be very popular.
How could this possibly go wrong?
Right.
The robots would never turn on you, would they? They're only going to fire when ordered to.
I can't shoot
aren't
him,
they?
Dave.
I'm sorry, Dave. This war doesn't make sense. I think you're the cause. All right, let's move on and check what is on the calendar. A lot going on in the calendar.
Tom, the calendar is full today, this week. By the way, speaking of today, now this is a big deal, everybody. It's the last day that Windows 2000 and Windows XP Service Pack 2 will receive support and patches from Microsoft. Last day ever.
So hurry up and
long
update.
Long after many of us stopped thinking about Service Pack 2. Today is really the last day.
Windows XP SP3 users will still be supported.
Yeah, starting tomorrow, Service Pack 3 will be required to receive support and hot fixes for Windows XP. By the way, and Eric, I believe that this was your trivia that you supplied us with. 74% of work PCs still run XP on hardware averaging 4.4 years old.
Can you believe that's 74%?
Well, that's just how bad Vista was.
I mean, you know, at first glance, I was like, whoa, that's crazy. But it kind of makes sense when you think about it.
The other 20% are Windows 286.
And you're one of them upstairs.
Upstairs. That's my computer here at the Twit Cottage. Yeah.
The Bing team says, Yahoo, we're on track for the fall. A little vague on profitability.
Yes, but Bing will be integrated into
on
Yahoo.
On track, yep.
In the fall. Coming this fall.
Coming this fall. To
an all-new search engine.
Bing and Yahoo together. And today, Tom, you may have seen a little bit on the Twitter, a little rumbling, some tweets.
Yeah.
Some tweeting about Geekness Day.
I saw some twittering, yeah.
What is this Geekness Day? Well, apparently, it's the official Embrace Your Geekness Day. And I thought, well, this is kind of cool. Where did this originate? Well,
not geekiness, it's geekness.
Geekness, yes, which is already sounds a little bit strange. Apparently a company or a website or whatever they are called Wellcat Holidays have some copyrights on some days that have themes. Which
how do you
I don't
copyright?
Even, I don't
right,
think
fine.
They're, I don't know how that works.
Should this website even have the rights to Geek Day? I mean, look at their website.
I know, it's the worst website ever made.
They make it in GeoCities?
No, I think that's Angel Fire.
Yeah. I love their cat. It's a well cat, so it's happy. Anyway,
well
so this,
well.
This website says, you know what July 13th is, everyone? It's Embrace Your Geekness Day. And I'm a little surprised that so many people have kind of jumped onto this, but they have.
What makes it a geek? What makes you geeky?
I'm glad you asked that,
have
Tom.
Have geekness.
Into dungeon games, comic books, and doing vampire dress-up. Spend endless hours going strange places on the internet. You're a geek, and this is the day to roar.
Vampire dress-up.
Well, listen.
What if you dress up like a werewolf? You're not a geek?
What if you play dungeon games that are not dungeon D&D kind of game?
Mm. I think that's what they meant. From look, vampire dress-up?
Listen.
Yeah.
I like to call myself a geek. I think we could all say that we're geeks in our own special ways.
I like to hope that I attain that
you
level.
You do more vampire dress-up than I do.
No, I don't.
So I've heard.
Not by much.
I stick to board games when dungeons are involved. Mm-hmm. But some of this is, just, I don't know. I don't know why Wellcat gets to tell us what geekness means.
Well,
but if you're into it, today's the day to celebrate. So embrace your geekness.
Embrace your vampire dress up. On to the voicemail. 260-TNT show is our phone number. You can give us a call, ask us a question pertaining to the show, or make a comment is even better. Here's actually someone providing information about how we fix this whole silent car problem we've been talking about. The last word.
Hey, TNT Show. This is Brandon with Cylon from Florida. The whole thing with the silent hybrids is really easily solved with a Vroom box. It's V-R-O-O-M box. They've been shown on Pit My Ride, and you can make the engine sound anything from a Shelby Cobra to a Harley Davidson to a Vespa scooter. I don't really see what the big deal is.
Oh.
Well,
okay.
You didn't have to be like that, but thanks. Yes. Pull up Vroom box. Pull up Roombox. Let's take a listen to one of the car ringtones.
How to make your car sound like something else.
Yeah, the idea with these, though, is not like make it sound like a TIE fighter or anything. It's to make it sound like a cool car. So they have like Porsche ringtones, Bugatti ringtones.
It's like doing the obnoxious muffler thing without actually doing anything.
Yeah, there you go.
Like this.
Listen to those pipes.
Oh, this is what I want to hear idling outside my apartment window. Yeah. Absolutely. You're going to be my best friend if you get one of these.
I'm going to bring over a boombox and play this outside your window.
Question for you. Is this tied to your accelerator, or is this just happening as you sort of
it's automatically triggered. So assume it's in the right location, one would think.
By the way, Pit My Ride is still on. Didn't know that.
I don't know. Must have been.
He's also in the car levels.
That's a Vespa scooter right
there.
That's not a Vespa scooter.
That's what it's labeled.
Vespa scooter sounds like this.
Well, it sounds like that when you're not right next to it. When you're it's off in the distance, it sounds like. All right, let's go to our next voicemail, which this one is directed towards you, Sarah.
Okay.
When you point out his segues like you did Friday. He quit his last show because somebody kept doing it. Hello, Brian. I'm talking to you. Don't keep doing it, please. I can't change my RSS feeds again. It's too painful. Thank you.
I love him. Wait a second.
I didn't quit my last job because Brian Tong.
Are you that
Tong
big of a prima donna? I mean, I knew you were difficult to work with, but.
No, I would just say.
Pointing
like,
out of the segues.
When you do a segue and someone points it out, it's no longer a segue anymore. That's
right.
All.
That's true.
Exaggerating.
The problem is that sometimes, and I think the TNT audience will back me up on this, sometimes your segues are exceptionally good, and I get excited about it, and sometimes these things just come out of my mouth.
Yeah.
And I go, that was so good. I love that segue. How about that segue in the chat room?
And you just want to tell people about it.
And I just want to, I want to be like, I think you're awesome, and I don't want you to quit.
No, I didn't quit because of that.
Because you're so awesome.
No.
I'll stop. You're not that great. You're just okay.
But you know what
so
is
please
great?
Please stay. What?
Our sponsor, Slingbox. They'll let you watch your home TV anywhere you go.
That was such a good segue.
Point it out.
That was a good segue.
That was a horrible segue.
That was maybe the worst.
That was probably the worst segue I've ever
had. You're put on the spot now. I have to stop paying attention. Not paying attention. We have sponsors? I don't know.
Anyway, horrible segue or not, Slingbox does let you watch your TV anywhere you go on most any portable device. You can watch it on a BlackBerry, on a laptop, on a MacBook. MacBook is a laptop, but I'm just being more specific there. Android mobile phone. So essentially, you go to Best Buy, you buy Slingbox, you take it home, you plug it into your TV, you plug it into your internet, and then you leave your house. And you go somewhere else with your internet-connected device, and you say, hey, yeah, I know we totally missed that Eureka episode, but I got it on my DVR, and your friend's like, well, I can't come all the way to your house to watch it. And you're just like, no problem. I'm whipping out my BlackBerry, and we'll just watch it right now together. Done. See? Problem solved. It will save your friendship. So go buy one. Slingbox. Pre-recorded shows from your DVR. Any of the stuff you get at television. Watch remotely. Find an in-store demo at a Best Buy near you or visit slingbox.com.
Don't end up walking around the demilitarized zone Get a sling box. Save your friendships.
Exactly. On to the emails to TNT@twit.tv. Brian E. writing in says, aren't dictionary attacks more about playing the numbers than hacking a single account? So a hacker gets 1,000 account names, tries to log in with, say, password, then they try each account one time, and therefore they wouldn't trip the 3-strike limit. Playing the averages, they should find at least one account that works. Next, they can try another common password after taking a break. Lesson, use LastPass with secure, unique passwords. And, of course, William Gibson talked about LastPass a lot on Security
Steve
Now.
Steve Gibson.
I did it again. Steve, I'm sorry. It's flattering, I suppose.
Totally,
at least I hope it is.
It's absolutely.
Steve Gibson talked about
Debbie Gibson. I might feel a little weird about the whole thing. William Gibson, also
Steve
part
Gibson
of the Twit Network.
About just... it on Security Now. but Brian brings up a really good point here, which is they don't go after you particularly.
Right.
You know, we're being a little narcissistic in our analysis of like, oh, they're after my data. They just go after like every Yahoo account.
Right.
And they try each one once with that dictionary cranking away. And so they don't time out with the 3 strikes because they've just moved on. But if you have a dictionary word, you're at a higher chance of falling to that attack because it's going to keep going. They just let that thing crank away for days.
I mean, is there anybody out there going, well, I like my dictionary word and you know what? I'm keeping it.
Yes.
I hope not.
I bet there is. In the chat room right now, raise your hand.
There,
who are you?
Come on, chat room. If anyone raises their hand, they get kicked.
Anyway, as Mel Gibson was saying on Security Now, 2 days ago, I saw a rig that could hold that tanker. All right. I apologize, Mr. Steve Gibson. I have followed your work since long before I ever knew about Twit, and I feel horrible that I keep doing that. Can you read can you read the next email?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get this person's name right.
All right. Khalid, the economist, self-proclaimed, I guess, from Abu Dhabi writes, Tom. Yesterday, while discussing Consumer Reports' review of the iPhone 4, all of you collectively said that we need to push Apple to fix the phone, to fix the iPhone. Well, there's a better way to fix products by not buying them.
No.
If the iPhone 4 continues to sell like hotcakes, as proven by the fact that it's out of stock in most places, Apple doesn't have to have any incentive to fix anything. And if I'm an Apple shareholder, I wouldn't want them to spend more money on something that's selling well. Love the show.
True. Although I think the opposite argument here is like, I didn't know it was broken when I bought it for the first wave of people.
Sure.
For the people still going in and buying it now, you got no excuse.
Sure.
You should know that this thing is broken. But
if you're buying it willingly,
but for those of us who got it day one, I guess you could return it. You know, you might have to pay a restocking fee, but you could fight that. And it goes back to my point before, is people seem to still want it anyway.
I mean, I think Khalid, that's exactly how, you know, if there are products that are bad or there's, you know, the company's got bad intentions or whatever. I mean, the best thing that consumers can do is boycott, right?
Yeah.
Don't buy it. Then they have to change their ways. That's how it works for a lot of things. So in theory, this is fine. It just doesn't seem to be the case.
Greetings from Flagstaff. That's not how Trisha talks, but she did write that. I am a technology teacher in the beautiful mountains of northern Arizona, and they are beautiful. I've driven through them several times. Your segment on Google's new app inventor caught my attention on episode 29. I took a look at what Google is offering. That block style of programming has been used for a long time by the folks at MIT. Scratch is a free download for any operating system that teaches people the basics of programming in a simple way. My colleagues and I have worked with elementary age kids to adults with great success using Scratch. Since Scratch does not specifically offer the ability to create apps for Android, App Inventor could be a natural extension of the learning of users of Scratch. Thanks for the heads up.
You heard it here. Teachers love it.
Children of all ages.
App Inventor.
As I said yesterday, will be learning to program. And it's perfect. If you've been using Scratch in your curriculum already, it can plug that right in and say, okay, you guys are familiar with how this works. Now we're going to make a smartphone app.
Totally.
And I want to see what kind of smartphone apps come out of your classrooms. That's fantastic. Thanks, Trish, at the Flagstaff Unified School District, for writing in.
What grade does she teach? She doesn't say.
She
says elementary age.
Well, she says, she says elementary, and she says she's taught programming from elementary age kids to adults.
Okay.
So it sounds like it's a broad spectrum.
It's cool. I love the idea of any teacher, but especially elementary school teachers being like, this is awesome. I'm going to introduce this right away.
Yeah,
I'm into
yeah.
it.
I like
you know?
That too.
Yeah.
All right, folks, thanks for watching TNT. Of course, you can get in touch with us. TNT at twit.tv is our email address. You can phone us, like our callers did today, 260-TNT-SHOW, 260-TNT-SHOW, or find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. See you next time.